The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Buildup with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, what's happening, everyone? You're on The Buildup as we get ready for today's game between your San Jose Sharks and the visiting Detroit Red Wings. Yeah, Todd McClellan in town. He was at the game last night. He was walking around just as familiar as he ever was with the building, which I thought was pretty fun. And everybody likes Todd. Great dude, great coach. Glad to see him with Detroit. And he's got Detroit playing well because that's a big, big challenge for the Sharks today, looking to see if they can make it 3 wins in a row and also 3 wins against very good teams at the start of this young NHL season. Some news out this morning. Unfortunate, Ryan Reeves has been placed on injured reserve. Ethan Cardwell has been called up, and we don't yet know what the lineup will look like today. I would imagine that Nedeljkovic will be in net for San Jose. Beyond that, it's a bit of an unknown. But to talk about a number of topics, we are now joined by Sheng Peng of San Jose Hockey Now and NBC Sports California. Sheng, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Very good. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well, man, and I am enjoying that I actually get to talk about some Sharks wins, especially considering the way that things started out 0-4-2. Let me ask you, before they did get that win against the Rangers, what was your concern level that it was going to spiral into something akin to what we saw the previous two seasons, of where it took towards the 10th game of the year last year to get their first win, and the year before it went double-digit losses before they won?
I think after the first 4 games, I was very concerned, even though they had 2 overtime losses in those games, because if you look at the 5-on-5 of those games, the last 3, Anaheim, Carolina, and Utah, they were soundly, they were skated out of the building at 5-on-5 in terms of possession time. And so that was a concern last year. That was a concern the year before, that they just couldn't, they couldn't kill plays. They couldn't sustain pressure in the zone or possession in the zone, offensive zone. And so I thought those things were coming back. It looked like the veteran defensemen that the Sharks added to address those problems weren't quite gelling quite yet. But the Pittsburgh game and then the Islanders game, even though they were losses, they were both games that the Sharks played well enough to win. And so I would say that after those 2 games, I started feeling better, I guess, about this team's chances.
Does that all attribute to the turnover from 1 year to the next, to where it's a completely new cast of characters, and that it's almost, I wouldn't say not fair, but it shouldn't be expected that a team with that much turnover would exactly hit the ground running?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, that's definitely a part of it, especially when you introduce so many, say, veteran defensemen who are used to playing a certain way, and then they need to kind of change up how they play. But we've also seen teams that have a lot of turnover and they start a season hot, you know? So yeah. I don't know if there's a tried or true formula for that. But yeah, for sure, though, that I'm sure that did play a part.
In terms of when things started gelling with wins on that East Coast road trip, both with the Rangers and the Wild, it was powered by Macklin Celebrini. But now we're watching more and more players step up. We've seen that second line with Philip Kurashev and Alex Wenberg play very, very well. William Eklund, obviously, I would argue he's playing the best hockey of his career, and I don't even think that's that much of an argument. We've watched, you know, Yaroslav Askarov have a good game, and we've watched also, you know, Alex Nedeljkovic have a good game as well. Like, is it important that it's not just the star exploits of Macklin Celebrini powering a team, even if in those certain games you'll take it?
Absolutely. A good team this isn't basketball. A good NHL team isn't just one player. So even though it does look like Macklin may have taken that leap to really superstardom, that, and granted, it's just the last like 8 games or so, but maybe he has done that. But that by itself isn't going to get you wins or get you a lot of wins. So it is really important that those other guys are stepping it up, especially the goaltending.
Yes, no, and I wanted to ask you what you thought about Yaroslav Askarov yesterday, because I thought there were a couple games that Askarov had played where the goals were not on him, and I thought it was just kind of like, that's, you know, you would love to see him make some more saves, but I wasn't really putting all the blame on him. And then last night, he comes up with his best game of the year by far.
The road trip was funny because he played so well in New Jersey. In Minnesota, I thought he played excellent. The stats don't reflect it, but I thought he played really well to get the Sharks in the overtime for Macklin Celebrini to win it in Minnesota. But then, though, in Los Angeles, I think he did struggle. I think you can kind of tell with Askarov after a game, actually, that he kind of knows if he played well or not. Against after the game in Los Angeles, he was very, very down. You can tell in the post-game interview. After the game in New Jersey, he was pretty upbeat because I think he knew that he had found something in his game there. And of course, we saw yesterday that he was vintage Askarov post-game.
No, he was. It was funny after that game in LA, he was, or against LA, I should say, he was not happy. I mean, that was the most demonstrably upset I think we've ever seen Askarov after a game. And I actually, some people say, oh, you can't be that reactionary, but I think it shows that he takes it hard and he wants to improve. I mean, I think athletes are usually so wooden, for lack of a better term, they just kind of want to give short answers after a loss and kind of move on. But I don't think it's the worst thing in the world that he lets on that he's ticked off by his performance when it's not his best.
How can you not be reactionary to it? It's your living. It is literally like life and death in terms of your career, at least. I mean, if for how you perform out there, and you have to come and answer questions from bozos like me afterwards if you mess up. There's not a lot of jobs like that. I don't. My job doesn't have that kind of pressure. If I mess up, I don't get called to the carpet by five or six media members asking me why I made that spelling error or why I didn't do that bit of research and that sort of thing. So I have no issues with guys who are emotional after games, after losses. We've seen a lot of it with the Sharks over the years. They are very short with you after loss. Like again, this is their living, this is their career, and it's all tied into their performance. So and the team's performance too. So I yeah. So that he shows some emotion or some sort of a kind of goes from a high of how upbeat he was after a win or he plays well, or the low of the LA game. And also too, I spoke with him after the Utah game, which he also seemed to take really hard too, because it just wasn't his game either. And it makes sense to me because that's their living right in front of us.
Alex Nedeljkovic has obviously had some good games as of late, which have helped the Sharks win. So has Askarov. But I have noticed much more defensive structure in the last two games. Unsurprising that they only allowed two goals in each of those games to New Jersey and to Colorado last night. So what have you seen that's changed? And it's very easy for me to point out they're more active with their sticks. They've been blocking more passes and shots. They've been doing a better job filling the slot and causing more, deflections and not allowing guys to get as many grade A's. But what has triggered that? Was that just an adjustment that needed to happen regardless?
I feel like the two things that stand out to me, and I think there are probably more than this, but the two things that stand out to me is that they did change their neutral zone forecheck for the Pittsburgh game. They changed it from a 1-1-3 to a 2-1-2. If it's hard to describe like over the air what that looks like, but basically a 1-1-3 is essentially three people in the back. So the last number that I tell you, those are the people in the back, and there's one in front and one in the middle, and so you have kind of one more aggressive forechecker. So the 2-1-2, there's two people in the back, but you have two more aggressive forecheckers, right? In the 2-1-2. And so I think that's helped the Sharks a lot because they said this themselves, they're a good skating team. And so what you've seen a lot in the last eight games is they've created a lot more turnovers and therefore a lot more offensive pressure. They've been on the counterattack more. They've entered the zone with other defense kind of scrambled, right? Not set up. And so they're able to have more zone time. And while that sounds all offensive, that leads to better defense because then you're not putting as much pressure on your defense to take on counterattacks and rushes, which is something that as Sharks fans, you guys have seen for the last couple of years nonstop. Turnovers or whatever, or not a lot of offensive possession, one and done in offensive zone, and then the other team's coming back on you. And so the Sharks are doing a better job of basically all starts. It does all kind of start in some. I mean, they always say it starts with defense and it leads to offense, but also goes the other way too. I think both are true, that it starts with offense and that makes your defensive life better. The second thing that I think is really important is, and this has nothing to do with the schematic thing, but they are much their puck management, I think, has been a lot better since the Utah game was miserably bad puck management. And I think since then, I think some of the veterans did not have good games in Utah. And so since then, I think the team has done much better job in general. They're still going to make mistakes. You're still going to try plays, and it's going to get picked off in a neutral zone. So, and no one is telling the Sharks players to not try plays, but still going to make mistakes. But in general, though, there's been a lot less of those neutral zone turnovers. There still have been bad ones. I mean, to give you actually a great example is the New Jersey game, second period. Mm-hmm. The first 15 minutes of that game, the New Jersey game, the Devils control it. And the Devils control it because the Sharks weren't being careful with the puck in a neutral zone. And you saw a number of examples of that. I don't need to tell you. If you just watch the tape, you'll see it. In my stories, I mentioned like four or five clear examples of that. But then once they cleaned that up and then they just started playing a basic hockey at the end of that second period, then they score two goals. You start feeling good about yourself. And then you have a 4-goal lead on the Devils. That's hard for them to come back from. And so anyway, just in general, the puck management, you can see that even in game, it still slips just like in New Jersey game. But it's just been generally better, though. And again, going back to the defensive part, if you turn over the puck in a neutral zone, then that means there's a counterattack rush coming back at you. Your defense isn't set, so they need to defend the defender rush. And so that leads to a lot of chances, a lot of grade A's and that sort of thing. So so those in general, to summarize those two areas, get the puck back in the offensive zone with a more aggressive forecheck. And don't turn over the puck in the neutral zone, and you're in better shape.
We have seen now the San Jose Sharks move Ryan Reaves to the IR, which means Ethan Cardwell is coming up. But I wanted to ask a little bit about the lines right now, and I think this is a fun debate because they're winning and they're playing better overall. But I watched a couple of times last night Macklin's line with Will Smith and Tyler Toffoli, the sleepover line, as the kids call it. And it just kept on occurring to me on several occasions. It was like one of these guys on Macklin's wing needs to have speed, neither of which Will Smith and Tyler Toffoli have. And then when I was looking at the third line, I kept on thinking to myself, Michael Misa needs true scorers around him. And that kind of leads us to the second line, which is actually the most balanced one right now in terms of Kurashev, Wenberg, and Eklund, to where you have a good balance of speed and defense, and it's playing very well right now. But it just also kind of points out some of the flaws that the other two lines, the first and third lines, had. And this is a team where it seems like the second and fourth sections are really well balanced, but the first and the third are actually a little bit kind of not wonky because they're very productive, but you can see a little bit of the flaws inherent.
I mean, yes and no. The first line's problem, I don't think is really, I mean, it's not even a problem, but it's not really like skating speed necessarily, even though Will and Tyler Toffoli don't skate as fast as Macklin. I think you can get away with not skating as fast if you can play fast. And you see that in many, many examples, just, I don't know, in recent NHL history. I remember a line, the Vegas Golden Knights, their very first expansion year. It was like David Perron, James Neal, and I don't remember who the center was, but it was not a very fast line, but they played fast. And so I think that with Macklin obviously is an incredibly fast skater, but he also, too, plays faster than everybody else. And so that's a part where I think that you see a lot of growth in that area, especially from Will Smith, in terms of playing fast from day one of last season. But he is still kind of still getting up to that speed, quite the Macklin speed. And Will Smith actually plays the game incredibly fast. He's a Lee hockey player, but that's kind of where Macklin is right now. So I don't know if it's so much, say, like putting Kurashev, right, who's a much faster skater than, say, a Will Smith or Tyler Toffoli on that line. I think it's more about, again, just playing fast is just as valuable as skating fast. It's probably, I would say, more valuable. There are things that can be improved in all the lines. But I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, this team isn't a perfect team yet. Even the second line that's been going so great, I wonder how long they can sustain the production, because if you look at Alex Wenberg and Philip Kurashev's careers, that they're not going to produce at this clip. You know, William Eklund, you give a little bit more kind of space to, because he is 23 and just coming into his own. So maybe this is William Eklund. This is the William Eklund that we're going to know for the next few years. I'm sure Sharks fans hope that's the case. But anyway, though, those are my overall thoughts on the lines, though, that I don't know if there's a quick fix anywhere there. But I think that just in terms of, you mentioned the third line, too. I mean, third line, I think, I don't know if, I mean, Misa has Jeff Skinner. Jeff Skinner is a more decorated goal scorer than Tyler Toffoli. So I don't know if that's how I see the issue on the third line is. I think actually the third line, Michael has to, he's just 18, of course, but he, like Will Smith last year, has to kind of pick up his pace.
Yeah, there was one specific situation yesterday where Misa had a wide open shot and decided to pass. And it was like, you got to take the shot just to ask questions of the goalies and the defense in this league, or else, you know, you're going to start getting played not to shoot, which was a criticism of Joe Thornton, especially in the 2014 postseason run, as the Kings just assumed that he wasn't going to shoot and it would allow them to take up more space elsewhere. And it's interesting though, because that learning curve, and that's a great segue. What do you think they're going to do with Sam Dickinson and Michael Misa here? And obviously, you know, we expected to get some news about Sam, you know, at some point this morning.
Yeah, I think they will keep Sam still. That's my guess. but they did make it interesting by not playing him yesterday, which they could have just played him yesterday to make it automatic. But I believe that they will keep him. I think with Sam, obviously, there's no question about his size and his skating. So the physicality part is no issue with Sam. The issue with him is processing, but how much is he going to improve that in processing the speed of the game in the CHL versus the NHL? Probably right. Not that much in the CHL. And I think the most important part of keeping Sam, at least in my mind, is that he has shown kind of a flexibility, a durability coming back from bad games, especially that Carolina game, which he was self-admittedly very poor in. And I think he has shown a lot of that kind of resilience to come back and learn from bad moments and bad games. And I think that's really valuable as a defenseman in this league, as a 19-year-old defenseman playing, you know, going from the CHL to NHL, and also a defenseman on the Sharks, who are still not one of the better teams in the league. He's going to be facing some chances here. But if you have the mental strength to stay in this league and learn from it and use the tough lessons this year as kind of learning moments, then he has all the physical tools to be here. With Michael Misa, I still think they'll keep him, but I would say though that his play hasn't progressed as much as Sam Dickinson's has in my mind. And granted, Sam is a year older and Sam is really a physical monster compared to Michael. Michael is a more cerebral player. Michael is also a year younger. But I think that they will keep him because I think he shows the smarts to be here. That's my opinion, at least. And I think it'll have to be a little bit like they protected Will Smith early last year. But I think that if they do that he can get better throughout the season. But though I would say though that I do see the argument a little bit to send him back just because the physicality of this league is he's kind of surviving it, I would say. And he can survive it and get better from it, but maybe the Sharks don't want him to just survive it. And granted, Will Smith did that last year. Will Smith survived it and got better. But anyway, so that's with Michael, I think, like the opportunity to go back to Saginaw and build up his body and just build up his skating speed and all that stuff, that would be valuable for him.
With Patrick Giles in the last couple of games, I'm just curious your thoughts on him because he's obviously not being relied upon to score goals and such, but I feel like his size and his speed and also his hockey IQ are fairly visible out there. Like there's a lot about his game, even though I haven't, you know, seen that much. We saw a little bit at the end of last year and just, you know, a couple games this year, but I feel like there's something that they acquired him for a reason.
Yeah, I think he's actually been a really nice fit into that fourth line. Done a nice job kind of just that fourth line center has been a little bit of a revolving door this year with Ty Dellandrea and Giles, and he's done a nice job of kind of just playing a basic straight ahead using his speed. He has good north south speed. He has good size and using that to his advantage. And that's what Ryan Warshawski likes about that line. Ryan Warshawski has said from the beginning of training camp that this is his most consistent line. And very noticeably, Ryan Warshawski will use this line at times where it seems like the Sharks are kind of going awry with their play. Actually, that New Jersey period I mentioned, 15 minutes of turnovers, right around that time, they put in the fourth line and they play a very basic straight ahead game. John Klingberg pounds a shot from the point. They get an offensive zone faceoff. And that kind of style of play leads eventually to the Sharks scoring two goals. So anyway, I think Giles is a good fit in that way because he plays a basic plays within himself sort of game. And I think that with Barkley Goodrow, I think has been very underrated this year in terms of, I think I can't calculate it, but he definitely looks quicker and faster this year. Yeah. And that's helped him on the forecheck because that's sort of his bread and butter game, the forecheck. And so he's been sort of the beating heart of that fourth line in terms of just keep it basic, but dump it in, but get on top of those guys on the forecheck, win pucks, be in the right place positionally, defensively. He's been the standard bearer there. And so whoever they put next to him, Giles, Delandria, now, of course, Ryan Reeves is hurt. And Ryan Reeves was an excellent standard bearer of that, too. But so I want to give, I guess, credit to Gaudreau in that conversation, too. Giles, I think, has been an excellent fit, his style of game. But Gaudreau is sort of, I think, the leader of that line.
All right, we are out of time, but be sure to join us at 4:30 for pregame coverage, 5 o'clock go time tonight, right here on the Sharks Audio Network, as the San Jose Sharks play host to the Detroit Red Wings from SAP Center. Big thanks to Sheng Peng for joining me. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.